Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, over 50 years ago, a series of cameras are positioned over 100 metres below the surface of Loch Ness. The idea being, obviously, to finally get a snap of the alleged monster. One of those cameras has been retrieved, and after all these decades, it's still intact. We're joined by Adrian Shine from the Loch Ness Project. Good afternoon, Adrian.
Hello.
So could you tell us who put the cameras down there?
Yes, it was Professor Roy McCall of the University of Chicago, who was the scientific officer of the Loch Ness Investigation Phenomenon Bureau, which was active between the 60s and 70s. You may remember all the big cameras that used to be placed around the loch. And he became their scientific officer, and he began underwater attempts, the very first attempts to photograph the Loch Ness monster underwater, with six instamatic cameras enclosed in Perspex cylinders, which were triggered by bait lines. And a little tug on the cord would activate a magnetic switch, which would fire the camera, which was a clockwork version of the instamatic camera. And so it didn't require winding on or the little flash cube. Do you remember the instamatic
camera? Yes, indeed, yeah.
They had little flash bulbs in a cube that went on top, and that rotated. And obviously it was square, and so you got four flash bulbs.
Oh.
So the camera would be theoretically capable of taking four pictures in the darkness of Loch Ness with flash each time the cord was pulled. In fact, it was so sensitive that when it was being deployed, and they were deployed every few days, these six cameras, the bait line, because of the wave action on the surface, the bait line would get pulled and the camera would trigger. And so what they did was to deactivate the trigger externally with Polo mints. You remember the mint with the hole?
Yes.
Yeah, they're still around, aren't they? Well, they're soluble, of course. And so a Polo mint should last about, I believe they measured it at 15 minutes. I haven't done it myself. But by that time, of course, the camera mooring would be on the loch bed and everything should be stable and static. So that's how it worked.
Okay. And these but were many of them lost over the years? Is that what happened?
No, well, there were only six to start with, but there was a late summer gale in 1970, and three of them were lost. And the one that has been retrieved was snagged accidentally by an AUV, an autonomous underwater vehicle, run by the National Oceanography Centre, and it was retrieved, and it was the Urquhart Bay one. So there are still two sitting somewhere on the loch bed. And,
okay.
It was remarkable. It was in remarkably good condition.
Yes, and it was sealed in some sort of chamber, I assume.
It was in a Perspex cylinder.
Yeah.
And it's a tribute to the construction of the cylinders that this one was dry after half a century.
Yeah, that's an extraordinary piece of construction. Was it possible to take out the camera and develop the film?
Yes, the NOC did that. Sadly, there was nothing on the pictures. Probably they were fired when the gale destroyed the mooring.
Right. Okay. So they wouldn't have.
That's when it would have sunk.
Yeah.
To the loch bed.
The quality.
But there were pictures on there, not showing anything. But there were pictures taken. You know, and they too remained on the film for that half century.
Those kinds of cameras, though, the quality of them wouldn't have been particularly good, would they?
Actually, no, I have to agree. They were little fixed-focus consumer cameras, but the whole thing's a tribute to the sort of spirit of improvisation of the times, in that the secret of them was the little flash cube. Remember, the ones that you didn't have a lot of electronic flash then. It was the flash cube and the clockwork mechanism, which meant that the camera wound itself on automatically. So it only had to be triggered that number of times. Quite a lot of the people involved back then were thinking quite hard about the subject. I mean, he, for example, he directed his cameras upwards to hopefully illuminate the lighter white underside of any expected marine or aquatic creature,
okay,
which are usually coloured dark on top and light underneath. It's called countershading. So they were fully aware of that. And, of course, the whole thing was only a stepping stone to understanding the mystery of the sea serpent, which was the bigger question. But, you see, Loch Ness was a block of ice until 10,000 years ago. So there's nothing, no endemic species, as we term them. The original investigators thought that a sea serpent, for want of a better word, sea serpent, sea monster, same thing, had somehow come up the river into Loch Ness and got stuck in there, where it would be amenable to identification. And in a way, they were right, as my little book explains. A Natural History of Sea Serpents explains why Loch Ness solved the bigger question.
Right. That sounds like an absolutely intriguing read, and I'm sure people will be looking out for that, Adrian. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Adrian Shine from the Loch Ness Project and author of A Natural History of Sea Serpents.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.